Where is he?
Where are you?
Skull Rock. Do you know it?
Hello, this is Stacy over at the Skull Rock Broadcast. I'm joined by...
Hello, this is Megan. Welcome back to our Stranger Things podcast. And we are also joined today by Alexis. Tell us who you are, Alexis.
I am Stacy's older sister.
Yay!
What an honor.
So nice to meet you. I have never met you before, so this is really fun. And we are super excited to have you on today and to chat. And how's it going?
Good. And I'm going to try my best not to embarrass Stacy too much with anything that I say.
Did you bring the childhood pictures to show me? Come on.
I should have. It's a total miss not doing that. I actually have her baby album in my home. It's in my possession. So I should have.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do another episode. Mm-hmm. A video
just a
episode.
Slideshow. Yeah.
I just hold it up.
Dear God.
Page.
Oh my gosh. How are you, Stacy?
I'm hanging in there. Pretty pumped to do this episode. Me and Alexis, we are about 3 years apart.
I thought you were going to say we go way back.
We go way, way back, way, way back. But no, it's pretty funny because whenever I describe Alexis, I'm like polar opposite of me. But then I'm like, but we did grow up with kind of the same stuff and we did have some of the same interests. Like earlier before we started recording, Megan went, so she's really into the horror stuff. And I went, oh no. I said, she watch the same stuff as me. I said, but does not like gore, does not like horror. I said, that was me. Like, from looks to style to interest overall, total polar opposites. But, I will never forget. I was actually at Alexis's first house when I first watched Stranger Things back in summer of 2016. And I remember you actually were on your way out, you and Sean, and you were kind of looking at the screen. And I remember telling you, I was like, man, this is like if Stephen King and Steven Spielberg made a show. This is really good. This is really great. And here we are now. So we're going to be talking about all things Stephen King, because Stephen King was a huge staple in our household. Our mother was a massive, massive fan. Got us growing up watching his films to his miniseries to eventually getting us into his work. And there's nothing we nerd out more than talking about our home libraries and his latest movies and his latest, books that have come out or what he has planned on the docket. So kind of what we're going to talk about today is kind of where we saw the Duffer Brothers maybe take some inspiration from the horror master himself, which makes perfect sense because Alexis lives up in Maine, which is King Country,
Is that where he's from? So wait to answer that question. I literally know nothing about Stephen King. So this is also super exciting for me because I'm going to learn a lot in this episode. And I feel like I've already learned a lot from Stacy on this podcast. And I feel like from our very first episodes, we've been kind of mentioning I know of some of the projects that books and movies and stuff, but so hearing all of those references, we can really dive deep into that today and I can learn more just about in general. So he's from Maine.
Yes. I love watching Stacy's face. It's just perfect.
Zero poker face.
Just
zero.
Laughing at me. What was his first book ever? I need Stephen King 101 here.
Alexis, take it away.
So I think Carrie. I mean, I know he did a lot of small articles and different things for different magazines and things like that. But Carrie, I believe, was the first of his work that got picked up for publishing, which
and
is
what,
pretty
what
cool.
What year did that come out in?
I think it was the 70s, wasn't it, Stace?
I want to say it was, and don't quote me on the 76, probably, because the movie came out in 78.
Okay. So his books would have been super popular in the 80s when Stranger Things was going on. And then when was the first movie adaptation of one of his books made?
I believe it was Carrie.
Yeah, I think so, because Carrie was a pretty big deal when it got picked up. I know for him, like reading his book, he wrote a book actually about writing and the writing process. And it was very heavily focused on like the experience of getting Carrie published and how like then it got picked up for a movie. And that was huge for him.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, I misquoted. Carrie came out in 76, so probably came out a year before then. And that was kind of like the overnight sensation. I mean, up until that point, he was, and if you ever go on the Stephen King tour, which shout out to SK Tours up in Maine, they do it out of Bangor, where Stephen King's like original house was. And that's kind of like where he, around the area where he taught, you know, at local colleges, but like, he was starving, basically. Him and Tabitha, his wife, they had three kids. They were really, like, living hand-to-mouth at the time. And he even said that when he was writing Carrie, he kind of stopped writing it because he was like, ugh, like, I'm a guy writing about a girl having her first period because that's the opening scene.
Yeah.
And he was like, I feel kind of uncomfortable doing this. And he threw it out. And Tabitha, good old Tabitha, behind every great man is an amazing woman. And that is Tabitha King. And she fished it out of the garbage. And she was like, I think you're onto something here. Like, keep going. And it's a pretty short book. In fact, when it got published, they had to fatten it up with, like, he had to write extra stuff, like, almost, like, flashbacks and, like, police investigation and, like, newspaper articles. He had to, like, kind of, like, fatten it up. But that's what kind of started it all. And he was so overwhelmed when he got his first check, which at the time, I think it was, like, a $20,000 check. But something like that to somebody like him and Tabitha, who's night and day, that... There's this adorable story that it was like a Sunday night that he got the check and he didn't know what to do. So he went out to the only store that was open, which was a drugstore, and bought Tabitha a hairdryer because he was like, that was the only thing, you know? And he talked about how being able to write that, it opened up doors for him, but he always stayed very local, very humble. You know, he used his money to help out, you know, the local community, which was huge. He put a lot of money into the children's hospital. He dedicated the local swimming like pool in town to his babysitter that had since passed away. Like really, really him and Tabitha were just good people. But in the 1980s was around the time our mother was probably part of his like book clubs and stuff where you would get sent his latest book and you would get to read it. And sometimes you'd get a sneak preview before it went to, you know, paperback.
Cool. Yeah. So I guess, Alexis, that would be how you became a Stephen King fan, through your mom being a Stephen King fan. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So our mom was always reading his books. And, you know, growing up, I was, and then she started introducing us slowly to things like that we could watch over time, which we didn't really have a lot that we were shielded from with what we could watch. In hindsight, I'm like, I don't know if we should have been watching that at that
explains
age.
Explains a lot.
You know, it does. It really does. So I remember asking her, I was probably 12-ish, maybe 13, like preteen teen. And I remember asking her and saying I wanted to start reading his books. And that, though, I know she was very hesitant on. She was like, I don't know that that's a great idea, because there's a difference to at least how his work used to come out in like a movie or a miniseries or something. There was, you know, it was always not watered down, but it was never as frightening as the books were. Like, it really, there is a huge difference, at least I've seen. Now that they're remaking them, they're striking different chords. But she did not want me reading his regular work, so she started she was like, if you want to do this, we're gonna start slow. And she let me read The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, which is one of his books about a little girl who gets lost in the woods and loves the baseball player on the Red Sox, Tom Gordon, because Stephen King is a huge Red Sox fan. And that was not really scary, but scary enough to kind of ease me into it. And then she let me read The Eyes of the Dragon. And that even was like a big, she was like, I don't know, you know, if you can't handle this, you may need to put this down. So, and I don't know if Stacey's experience was the same with that, but she definitely was like, I don't want you reading the really scary stuff yet. And, you know, he's also a pretty graphic writer. So you had to be ready for that, I think, from a maturity level.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, I know watching something, like, you can close your eyes, you can kind of tune it out a little bit. Like, reading is a lot more of an immersive experience. And I feel like maybe not for everybody, but I definitely experience things more deeply when I'm reading. So I can definitely see that it would be a lot to go into some of those, like, really dark themes and dark books at a young age. So it's cool that she was able to kind of, like, ease you into it and let you share in that thing that you knew that she really enjoyed, but also kind of like keep you sort of from going too far in it. It was, yeah. So what was the first thing that you ever read, Stacey?
Yeah, my experience was a little different.
Always.
You know, that second go around with the second kid. I believe it was his collection of short stories, Night Shift. It was his first collection of short stories. She let me read that. And then I remember I was like, well, I want to read Pet Sematary. And what she would do is she would actually quiz me to see if I was really reading it or not, because there is differences. And I remember Carrie was even one of them. She was like, how does Carrie die? And like, she would see if I was telling the truth or not. Luckily, I was really reading it. And I just have this vivid memory, and I don't know if you have the same one, Alexis, of her going, you have to wait until you're older to read Gerald's Game. And her even going, I don't know how there's a reason why there's never been a movie made about this yet. And, you know, I eventually ended up reading it. I was like, holy shit. Like, yeah, this can never be made. And then in 2017, we were graced with Mike Flanagan's Netflix movie, Gerald's Game. And I couldn't see any other person directing it. And he made an almost impossible novel being made into such a great film. Like, he was the man to do it right. And he also later on went on to do Dr. Sleep. And he's now going to do Life of Chuck. So he does have a history with Stephen King. But, you know, that was kind of our thing. But we grew up watching the It miniseries and the Stand miniseries. Mm-hmm. Those were big staples in the Still household.
What was the first things that you watched? Do you remember?
Probably the Stand, right?
Probably the Stand. Maybe It, though. They were like really around the same time. And that It miniseries when we were younger, like to us as kids, we were like, this is terrifying. But now the movie, I'm like, this is terrifying. Like now I see, you know, Tim Curry playing the Pennywise the Clown. And I'm like, this is kind of kooky. Like, you know, this is kind of like, yeah, this isn't really that scary. And now, you know, now that Skarsgård has taken over, I'm like, no, this is more in tune with the book that you need to put down.
Yeah. It was an event, me, her, and Sean going to see the two It movies up in Maine, because we were like, let's see how this is done. And I'm not speaking for you, Alexis. At least for me, I walked out of there both times going, that was as close as they could get to the level of terrifying that the book is, because I feel the book It is one of the scariest books. And I waited until it was right after Mom passed. I read it, so I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. Megan, do ever read it? Most terrifying book I've ever
read. Is that the movies that Finn is in?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like I've like had the desire to maybe watch the movies, but I don't think I can handle it.
If you don't like scare, no, it's like nightmare fuel and not.
I mean, I can handle the level of like Stranger Things scary, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no. So you don't, when Stacey makes like a suggestion for some new movie, you have to like really be careful, because.
Correct. I feel like she does pretty good job.
I've learned very well. Like anytime I got Megan to watch Firestarter, which we will be talking about.
Okay.
Stand By Me.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Stand By Me is not scary, though.
It's King, though. You know,
yeah.
But then we were talking about Day of the Dead, because they go and see it in season 3, and I go, absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a game. Can Megan handle this? And you're either, yeah, sure, or...
Well, Stacey, you handle movies, though, that, like, no one can handle. Like, that's so true. You're, like, here. And then yeah. the rest of us are here.
And then I'm probably like a little lower probably than here. That.
And every year as I get older, I get lower myself. I'm like, I don't want to watch that. And she's like, no, it's got a great story. And she tries to trick me. And then, you know, you're watching something that I'm not going to be able to sleep.
You've learned pretty well over the years. I mean, as a teenager, I used to drive you crazy. You'd be like, oh, I'm going to spend the night here. Show me a movie. And then we actually watched the Gerald's Game adaptation. And without spoiling it, there is a very graphic, gory scene in it. And I just remember being like, she's an insurance adjuster. She can handle this. And then you were like, I just remember you looking down going, what's the matter with you?
What would you say are your favorite books and then also, I guess, movie or TV adaptations?
You want me to take that, Stace?
Take it away, Lex.
Book, definitely The Stand. I think it's just classic Stephen King. I think I'm probably going to reread it again this summer. I like to every couple years, so it's been a little while because it is my favorite. I think the character development is just incredible. And I love 11/22/63. Again, I tend toward, I think, his like epics more than, you know, the books that are like this thick that you can really dig into. Films. Oh, and I can't forget Dr. Sleep either, because Dr. Sleep is fantastic. But film, I really love when Mike Flanagan does anything with his work. You know, I think like there's a whole like subset thing of Mike Flanagan's work on King. So Dr. Sleep, that adaptation, I loved. The Newsstand wasn't my favorite. I found it interesting, the modern day adaptation.
Yeah.
And probably, I mean, I like the new It movies. Like the original will always have a place in my heart, but I feel like the new ones stay as true to the book as they could have, aside from being set in a different decade.
Mm.
So
are you excited for Welcome to Derry?
I am, hesitantly. I'm always hesitant now when something new of his is like brought to the screen, because I'm like, I'm gonna have done this right, because I've seen a couple of things get really screwed up.
Nothing will tear your heart out more than seeing a bad adaptation of his work, because you're like, you could have had the whole world, babe, and you played yourself. But yeah. I agree. I like Megan, I honestly think you could handle The Stand, and I think you could handle 11/22/63, especially 11/22. Lexis was the one, she let me borrow her copy of it, and it's just about a man who goes back in time to stop the JFK assassination. And it's so heartbreaking, but so well done. And it's definitely a favorite of mine. I love the classics, but I have to say it. I do enjoy The Stand. I've probably only read it. I've read the uncut once, and then the full version one, the unedited one, maybe twice. And it's an undertaking. It's like, it's what, 2K for pages?
Yeah, it's multiple thousands of pages. It takes time, and I'm somebody who reads, like, I'm always reading, so I'm pretty quick reading, and it takes time to get through it. But it's so worth it, because to Stacey, it's not a scary book. Like, the concept is scary. What, you know,
especially
like world ending plague. Yeah. But it's not, and like, but the good versus evil of it and all of that isn't like this in
like
your
monster.
Face,
yeah,
like scary. It's really just like, what if the devil were walking the earth because something so terrible had been released that, you know, he was basically pitting people against one another. So yeah, I love The Stand.
Yeah, it's so good. And like, yes, the original 94 miniseries, like, has it aged well? Not really. Like, some of the computer effects look like shit. I hate to say it, but it was one at the time the biggest production ever. Like, I think they had over like 3,000 extras in it, and they had cameos by like huge hitters. And King was heavily involved. He even acted in it, and it was shot all over the country, which was amazing. Mm. But we grew up watching it all the time, and it was really, really good. That's why I kind of like. The new version was okay, but my heart is where the original is. But I'm also like a fan. I love It, of course. It's terrifying. It was well done. But I really like his books, like what under Bachman? Is that how you say it, Lex?
Yeah, I think so. Richard
he
Bachman.
Did like, he wanted to see, which he kind of almost pulled a Joe Keery. He was like, I don't want to be just known and, you know, ride off my name, the success mm-hmm. of my name. I want to like see if my other books under a different name would do well. So he published like a handful of them. And he even kept it going at one point. He like killed that author off. And he said that like his widow, only Stephen King would think of this, found like, you know, transcripts underneath the stairs of their own house. But he made a book called Desperation and the Regulators. And the Regulators was under Bachman and Desperation was under him. In which like by then the cat was already out of the bag. Somebody figured it out. And he uses all the same characters, but in different universes. So if there is a brother and sister character, you know, the sister in Desperation might be the oldest. In the Regulator, she's the youngest. It's like subtle little differences, but Regulators, I cannot push enough. It's what would happen if an autistic child had the ability to actually alter the universe. So his favorite comic characters and like aliens from a TV show and cowboys from a Western he loves become the villains and like take hostage an entire suburban street in middle America. So like only King would be able to think of this stuff, but definitely that stuff. And, you know, I don't know, Alexis, if you would, you know, agree with me, but I think the Duffers took this page out of King's book. Our mother used to always tell the story that she was reading The Stand for the first time and a certain character gets killed off, a beloved character. Mm-hmm. And she was so upset she threw the book across the room and she couldn't pick it up for like a few days. And Stephen King's like on writing, he has this great saying, kill your darlings. Basically make these, you know, well-liked, you know, lovable, you know, like characters you can relate to that you're rooting for. And then if you want an emotional impact, take them from you, the audience, the readers, you know, the viewers. And I feel like the Duffers, at least, they've done this several times, but especially with Eddie Munson, make this character that either you remember somebody like that in high school or you were that person and you're rooting for, and then boom, snatch them away. Which, you know, makes me a little nervous for season 5,
and
but that's
Bob,
just me.
Bob Newby.
Bob. Who kills Sean Astin? Hello, the Goonies.
Alexis, have you read everything that he has written? Or
no.
Are there some things that you haven't read yet?
Okay. I still haven't read everything. I was actually, when Stacey asked me to come on, I was like, I wonder how many of his books I've read. Like, I feel like I've read a good amount. And when I was going through his website, because his website has a list of all of his work just under, I don't think his Bachman books are even on the website. I think it's like a separate list, I believe. I didn't see a couple on there, but there are a lot on there that I haven't read, and I was really surprised. And Stacey and I have different lists of King that we've read. Like, she loves Cujo, like loves the book, and I won't read it. I can't read it. I just, nope, won't do it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and there are big ones that I haven't read, like The Shining too. So that, you know, I've read Dr. Sleep. I know The Shining. I've seen
only
the
Alexis
Shining,
would
but...
read the sequel.
I usually can't, but I was like, you were like, I don't like The Shining. And then I was like, you don't like The Shining. Well, I don't want to waste my time. But now I'm like, we have such different opinions now on his work that I'm like, I feel like I need to go because I will probably love it. And Stacey
will hate that.
I love it.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever, like, I feel like I can't read something after I've seen a movie adaptation, though. It's harder for me to, like, get into a story if I already kind of know what's going to happen. So have you ever done that, like, seen the movie first and then gone and read the book?
Yeah, with most of his stuff, I think that's how I've done it because, like, we watched The Stand. I've seen The Shining, and eventually I'll read it. Salem's Lot. I mean, that's been remade so many times. We definitely watched that before ever read the book. Green Mile, I don't know which one came first. I feel like I probably saw it first and then read it.
Okay.
So, but I feel like, again, they can never really get all of his stuff, like, into the screen, because his books are just so detailed and they're so alive that it's really tough to get everything. So I do feel like I'm almost experiencing a whole different story. Like, I'm familiar with the characters, but it's a very different story. And some of the way, like, his scenes and locations and stuff come to life are just so different and out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you're
sense.
A huge Dark Tower fan, which I know I'm yet to get into, but there's, like, how many books are there in that series?
I think seven, eight. I think
absolutely
eight. Yeah, I am a huge Dark Tower nerd. Like, love the Dark Tower. Stacey teased me a little while back when you said that Flanagan had picked up the rights. I don't know if that was accurate or if you've heard anything, but, like, I would have loved to have seen him do something with it, because the film adaptation. I love Matthew McConaughey.
I went with her for The Promise of Free Popcorn.
But I love the Dark Tower so much, and those characters are so beloved to me. And they tried to cram, I think it's eight books. They tried to cram eight books into one movie instead of, like, staggering. And I don't think I've ever been so disappointed with a
mess.
I was like, it's ruined. It's ruined. And then I had to reread the whole series because I was like, I can't.
Cleanse your palate.
Yeah. Yeah. I just got to go back because this is, yeah. So.
I do sometimes feel like I need to do that with Game of Thrones. If he ever finishes the series, I need to, like, reread it from the beginning, because he needs to actually write the final books to, like, fix that ending that they did with the show.
Yep.
Yeah.
What would you say, like, the big, like, themes are? Is there always something kind of, like, supernatural going on, or is it sometimes more realism? And I feel like some of it isn't scary. Like, is The Green Mile a scary movie? Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's, his work is so, like, diverse, I guess. Like,
yeah.
So what would be, like, the common themes?
There are definitely a lot of supernatural elements to it, for sure. Like, even in his more like, coming of age books and things like that, like Stand By Me and those stories, like, there are still elements of, like, the, like, little twinkles of things that happen. I think in The Green Mile, it's been so long, but isn't the lead character, he's got, like, this, like, somewhat psychic ability.
He's got, like, it's almost like he was touched by God. He's like an angel walking on earth, and he can heal people.
Yeah, there's always this, like, mystique element to things. Good versus evil, always in his books, very strong, you know, like, battles between the two. And I think he's really interested in playing with timelines and multiple timelines, multiple dimensions of, like, you know, we live on this plane, but there are infinite other realities going on, you know, at any point in time. Like, whether it's a character who's actually going into another world. Like, I just read Fairy Tale, which is one of his newer ones.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The character actually goes into another world that's below this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sounds
yeah.
familiar?
Yeah, I mean, right. So, like, it's always, and then 11/22/63, you know, it's the portal and the timeline jump. So he's very interested in, like, alternate realities of things that have very similar characteristics to this world, but they're all, like, they're a little out of shape somehow. You know, they're you see them just like when you think about the Upside Down, like, they're there in theory, but they're different somehow. They're, you know, it's like the skeleton is there, but the rest has changed.
Okay. That's cool. That makes sense.
That's good to know.
Wow. And I think Stacey said you haven't read The Talisman, which I know he co-wrote that with another author. But that one had a little bit more of, like, fantasy, I think, to it.
That's Megan's first Stephen King book.
And I haven't finished it. I've only listened to maybe like a quarter of it. So I need to go back and try to finish it. But it's the book that Lucas is reading to Max when she's in the hospital at the end of season four. So I was like, oh, I need to like read this. But also, are the Duffer Brothers going to do an adaptation of it? Is that something I
made up?
It was
announced.
Or it's like a rumor. Yeah. It's rumored, I guess. Yeah. So eventually I'm going to have to finish it. But I guess that author, I think, was the author that he wrote it with was more of a fantasy author. So, but I could definitely see those, you know, those multiple dimensions. That's a thing in The Talisman as well. So that's interesting.
Because didn't you say there's a thing called the territories?
Yeah, which is like they have to like go through sort of portals to like get to the territories, which in the quote that you hear Lucas reading to Max, he mentions the territories. But then there's also like twinners, like so some people have like an alternate version of them in the territories, but some people don't. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. But what? Okay, so I think you kind of mentioned this a little bit, but what would be some of the books that you would love to see an adaptation made of?
Definitely if they could redo Dark Tower, but take each book and dedicate a film to it. Because there's so much in each, you have to give it the time. And each one of those books is set in a somewhat different, the whole thing in the Dark Tower is like there are levels and you're kind of moving through. And so like that would be, I think I'd really like to see that probably the most. I don't know one that hasn't been done. I mean, Fairy Tale would
properly.
Be cool. Like, because I just read that and I feel like they could do, they could do a lot with that because that's also very like fantasy-esque, and it could be neat. He does a lot with like younger characters too. So I always find that that's like a good audience pull, like all around to, for people to get behind, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know what else. I mean, like a good version of Needful Things would be great. I know they did
talk my language.
Yeah, like an actual redo.
We don't talk about the movie.
Yeah, like
Harris.
A redo would be nice.
Like, I think you could handle Needful Things, Megan. Like, it's just a small town in which basically the devil comes to the town and opens up a curio shop. And how it's like you could buy your greatest desire there, but it would actually look like an item, like let it be a photo of Elvis or a baseball card. And in order to get it, you have to run a little errand and play a little prank on somebody, but it sets off a like a domino effect in which everybody like has a grudge against somebody and it becomes like this all-out blowout because he always used to use the town of Castle Rock. And then this was like his goodbye to Castle Rock. He was like, I'm going to basically destroy the entire town. So this will no longer be a location that I write about. And it's on such an epic scale of the good of humanity versus the bad. And he references so many of his past works and that. And I always was like, if I had like unlimited like fuck off money, I'd be like Duffers, HBO. So you have no restrictions rating wise. Get it done. And I feel like them or Flanagan could definitely do it right, you know? And I'm not picky. I know a lot of people didn't like the newest Salem's Lot. I liked it for how much they tried to cram into just a two-hour movie. But I feel like that would be well done because that Ed Harris one.
No.
Rough. Rough.
What other, do you have any more, Stacey, that you would like to see?
My biggest one is Needful Things.
Okay.
I would like to see The Regulators. It's yet to be done. Desperation was done in 2006 as a miniseries, but I don't know if he had a contract with ABC because that's where his miniseries Rose Red aired, and so didn't Storm of the Century, both of which are great miniseries. For being on like regular primetime TV, it didn't have to be ultraviolet. Violent. It didn't have to be like, you know, really graphic. They were just great stories in general, and they always get like best of the best of cast to get behind this.
Yeah.
So like if that entire crew that did Storm of the Century and Rose Red came back to do maybe a proper desperation in regulators. I'd love to see that. He did recently, I read it during the pandemic, and then I saw the HBO like miniseries, The Outsider. That was done really well. And he has this character. Who is it? Holly, right?
Yeah, Holly is the character that's in, she's in a number of his books, and he actually has written a separate book about her, Holly. And
I
she's
love that.
In The Outsider. Yeah.
Holly Wheeler.
She's in the, I know Holly Wheeler. She's in the Mr. Mercedes books, and she's in like If It Bleeds, which is like a collection of short stories. But what he likes to do is bring back the same character. And I've heard some people say they prefer the actress who played her in the Mr. Mercedes, you know, show versus The Outsider. I've only been exposed to The Outsider, but he's able to make like the simplest scene heartbreaking. And I feel like the Duffer brothers can pull that off very well, where it's just a scene of two people talking, but the subject matter will rip your heart out. That's why, you know, a scene in The Outsider, without giving anything away, is a police detective is talking to a guy that's been accused of horrific crimes. And this particular character was a little league coach. And it's him kind of talking about the police detective's son, who has now since passed. Only in the miniseries has he passed, not in the actual book. And it's just such a simple, you know, monologue, but it's so well done. It reminds me of David Harbour's monologue, talking about how he thinks he might be cursed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an actor spitting out some lines, but both with the writer and the actor, it makes you like go like, oh my God, my heart just got like ripped out. What the fuck?
Yeah. That's funny with the name thing, because I do feel like you've mentioned like a bunch of names that are in Stranger Things that it seems like they kind of borrowed, or they were inspired by like other things, like maybe Stephen King's work, for like pulling those names in. So it's funny. Speaking of Stranger Things, let's talk about that for a little bit. So Alexis, when did you start watching Stranger Things?
That was when Stacey was on me for a while, because it takes me a lot to like get into a show, because I don't have a lot of time to watch things on my own. So I have to not only want to watch it myself, but I have to get my husband on board to watch, because our TV time is so limited that we're like vying over a couple hours. Stace, that was probably, we were already living in Maine. So what, like maybe 2020?
I'd say 2022 when season 4.
Yeah, it was right before the last season had been released that we had finished and caught up. And then I think we were only waiting a short time before the season came out. And then the latest season came out and we just so happened to have COVID, and we were both like, well, I guess we're going to just finish this now. So, yeah, we watched it pretty much all at once. If not, like within a few months.
Did anything kind of stand out for you when you watched it? Like, did you like it? Like, what did you kind of feel about it?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, again, Stacey was like, we've done this thing over our life where we're like, you need to watch this, you need to watch this. And then we like make little deals. So I was like, all right, I'll do it. And immediately I was like, the first episode felt very nostalgic to me for something that I wasn't, that I didn't even know I was like. I was like, I haven't watched this show before. How do I feel this nostalgia? But then I'm like, you know, it has elements of so many other movies and TV shows and things like that that I love from that time, that I was like, oh, this, you know, it's kind of got like an E.T. feel. It kind of has like a Goonies feel, like it already, you know. So it really pulled me into that first episode with and such a good cliffhanger of like, what just happened? So that, and I think anything that you do with like coming of age characters, you know, kids that are like up to like they're doing their own little thing in their little group, like that's always interesting to me to see them banding together over time and growing up. So that I really liked. There's a good mix of characters for you to follow and to get to know and to see them like over the seasons, how they're growing up.
Yeah.
Literally. Like, you know.
I want to know what the deal was. Like, Stacey, what did you have to watch? Because Alexis finally watched Stranger
Things.
Wasn't
it Game of Thrones during 2020?
Yeah, because you said, when did you get your tattoo? Oh, your Game of Thrones tattoo.
The end of that summer. Literally, yeah. Alexis was like, you have to, Stacey. You love an epic. You have to. And I went, you know me. I'm going to hyperfixate, and then I'm going to get a tattoo based off it. And that's exactly what happened.
She said when she got it, she was like, I told you this was going to happen. And I was like, I know. But you're thankful, though. So
I am. It's worth it. And what a perfect time to get into it. So when she got into all the seasons and you guys plowed through them, I was like, you guys just got into this at the perfect time right before volume 2 dropped, you know, that you guys were able to watch it almost live when it dropped. So perfect. Yeah. I mean, it took you about 2 years, but you know what? The deal was struck. We follow through.
Yeah.
It's all that matters.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
I love that. And I love how so many people can feel nostalgic, like watching Stranger Things. And like you said, you're not even like sure why you feel nostalgic for it. Like, and I haven't even seen like, well, I hated E.T. as a kid, so I really didn't connect it to that. I had like seen the Goonies, but like maybe once. But so we did the summer episode, right, Stacey? And one of my movies that I picked, I was like, oh, it all makes sense now, because I was nostalgic because I loved Now and Then. And I was like, oh, like, this is like so similar to that kind of vibe. So, yeah, it's really funny, which
Megan
you had
recently,
never seen. Had
Megan
you
recently. Oh, I grew up with Now and Then because this one loved
one,
it so much.
Which one of my movies did you?
Babysitter's Club.
Oh.
We listed very opposite lists, as you can tell, but I was proud of Megan. Megan actually had watched The Lost Boys for the first time a few years back.
Ooh, yeah. And that can be, that's a scary one.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I feel like I could handle it, though.
It's because everyone was so pretty in it.
Yeah, I mean, I just was, like, attracted to all of them, so.
A lot of glam.
Yeah, yeah. Who would you say is your favorite character from the show or characters?
It's gonna really, it always pisses Stacey off so much that I like Nancy.
I like Nancy too. She knows that I like Nancy.
Sandwiched between two of the same people.
She's really, though, she's interesting. You know, you don't, the way she starts off, you don't picture her being how she is now.
Yeah.
So I always like that. I like the evolution of a character.
Yeah, her character development does not get enough like attention because it is really great. And I think the first, so I rewatched, like I got really obsessed with the show after season 4 and like rewatched everything. And I was like, you know, all about Steve at that point. But like the first time I watched the first 3 seasons, like I was more like involved, like more invested in probably like Nancy's storyline and like that, like part of things, and the kids too, but like I felt like I connected the most with Nancy. I think we're both older sisters, like I'm the oldest sister too, so like you and I, Alexis, have that, but also Nancy, like that kind of like
Stacey's so disturbed,
she's rolling her eyes at us.
Yep. But, seen that face many times.
Yeah, valid. I like Nancy too. Do you want to ask a question, Stacey? I've been asking all the questions.
No, you've been doing a great job.
Now she's like, "Do I? Do I have questions?"
You can ask them. You can ask the next question.
Do you have a favorite season?
I mean, I really liked the last one. I feel like it was the most like they all had a lot going on and a lot of like action and things happening. But I feel like this last one for me, like being a Stephen King fan and liking like this like epic, like where are we entering right now? That that I really liked from the last season. I really liked how much time the different groups got around, that not everybody was like sandwiched together again. Like there was a little bit of like this working in, I don't know, pods, if you will, because I think that gives you a little bit more time to dig into characters too, instead of when you have this big ensemble cast and they're together, it can make it really, really difficult to get to know everybody on the level of like, oh yeah, I really like, you know, I really like this person this season.
Yeah, I get that. I think the experience of watching season four was unique also in that we got like the cliffhanger in the middle, and you were basically watching it kind of live at that point too. So like we got like left off in May with this like cliffhanger and this big reveal, and had to wait 2 months to like get those last two episodes. And that just kind of like created some more suspense, like, because typically with the streaming show, you're getting it all at one time. You can watch it at your pace. Like, you can create your suspense if you want, like me watching an episode a day.
Serial killer. Like, she was like, oh, yeah, when I watched these before, I saved an episode a night. And I'm like,
Megan and I are the same, though, Stace. We do the same. Sean and I do the same thing. We it's like a treat. We're like, do you want to watch one? And then we'll save the next one.
Exactly.
Like, we don't binge shows. And also, I get very like emotional watching a show that I'm, you know, that I'm into. And sometimes I feel like I need to digest what I've just seen. I can't just jump
into
the next
nodding
episode.
Along.
Yep.
I need time. Sometimes I'm like, it's like when I finish a book too. I'm like, I need a minute. I need to like put that story away. Give my characters the time to think through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't. I know you just sit there and you're like, let's go.
Like, I got my Domino's pizza on my lap.
She's like, next 8 hours of my life. Like,
yep.
Cannot.
I mean, I've definitely binged shows before too, but like for something that I'm so invested in that I like that much, I don't want to binge it. It's like, it's a weird phenomenon. Like Once Upon a Time, I binged that show because it was like, I haven't even finished it, but I wasn't really into it that much. So like I could just like casually just like keep watching it and like see what happens. But I don't know. It's funny.
Yeah.
I'm talking to the same two people. This is freakish. I know, Alexis, you haven't read Firestarter, but you are aware of the movie with Mr. Barrymore. We do not mention the remake at all. But I got Megan to watch the movie, and I always said Firestarter walked so Stranger Things could run. And did you see any like similar like themes going on with that movie with the show?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think the whole, you know, young girl who is born with or has these capabilities, who then is treated almost like a specimen, that it becomes this frightening realization of, oh God, it's now you're not a person and you are this like lab subject. Definitely with that. And then the whole, you know, I think that there are a lot of themes between that and I would say Carrie too, with 11 or L, because, you know, they're both these young women, or all three, these young women characters who have this crazy ability to do whatever, to control things with their mind and to make huge impacts in the world, and they're so mistreated that then it becomes this like, well, now there's this angry like storm that's brewed that like they can't necessarily control it. You know, I think about like the scene at the skating rink with 11 when she, that's very Carrie to me, very like, you've pissed me off, you've pushed me to the brink, and like now I'm gonna get you. And so, I think that there's a lot of that between the two books, where it's this like the government steps in and maybe doesn't necessarily always through Stephen King's work. It's like the government may be telling you they have your best interest, and they may be saying like, oh, we're the good guys, we're going to help you figure this out. But it never quite turns out the way that it should.
Yeah, especially like when
Terry Ives, Elle's mother, her sister is telling Hopper and Joyce in season one, like, ever read any Stephen King, and talks about how Terry did all this experimental stuff as a young woman, and kind of much like Charlie's parents did, you know, they were college kids and they just weren't accounting that these two people, given these, you know, experimental drugs, would actually end up producing a child. So there is the shop, which is the lab in Firestarter, and then there's the lab. And I always think of, you know, the orderly, the friendly orderly in Firestarter is Rainbird, who befriends Charlie and is like, you know, no, I'm your friend. Mm. And, you know, when they're betrayed, it's the ultimate betrayal. And that's very similar to not only Papa, but to Henry slash one as well. You know, that's the ultimate betrayal in a environment where these children didn't have an emotional adult connection. That's it, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I don't think I thought of that connection until now.
Look at that.
Yeah. Look at you, sis.
Dust off those shoulders, baby. But I know there's a guard that's guarding Will's body, and he's reading the hardcover edition.
That's what I was going to say. So I like how there's like, thank you, she can read my mind. There's like some direct connection, like references, like with that example that you came up with like the... have you ever read any Stephen King? And then there's like the guard is reading Cujo, right? So like mm-hmm. Hopper comes in and is like, what is it? He's like, that's a nasty dog.
Mutt.
Yeah. I can tell you that I would never read that one either or see any movies. Like, not,
you know, it's funny. I've asked Alexis and she's like, as a dog owner, I can't.
Yeah.
No.
You know, and I think you would feel the same way, Megan. Like, yeah. Just can't
just
do it.
Just an animal lover in general. Yeah. Well, because, like,
I
mean, you know,
I'm reading
me...
it for the umpteenth time with Quinn on my lap, and I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
She's like, that's a nice little tale.
But my mom was the same way with Pet Sematary. Like, she refused to ever read that because she was like, I had two young kids at the time. Like, absolutely not. So I think if a writer can make that big of a no, no way, can't do it, you know, they're doing a good job. And yeah. I feel like the Duffers, like, they've done a great job. I mean, I didn't even put the connection of Will's fake body. It's a bunch of kids going down train tracks, and they eventually are finding a body.
Like Stand By Me, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It was fun when I watched that one, too.
That's a fun movie in general.
Yeah, like, it is a fun movie.
River Phoenix. But Alexis, what would you think is like kind of like the similar themes with It to Stranger Things?
I mean, I see a lot of the gang in It, in Stranger Things. You know, I think you see the boys in It are all in love with Bev. You know, I think you have this like one central female character that the boys always end up being like they all have crushes on or whatever. And mm-hmm. I think in the beginning, you know, that's obviously Elle, but then Max gets introduced and like there's also this like, oh, you know, it's Max and, you know. Mm-hmm. So I see that. And then, you know, the freedom that they have. And I think you have a lot of that because these things are set in different decades of it wasn't odd for kids to be like out riding their bikes, going wherever all over town, you know, to be able to do those things. And then, you know, you always have the stuff with It too of like you have the bullying characters, like the Henry character in that, who very much reminds me of Billy in Stranger Things. That is already a little bit of like that, like seedy character, maybe not the best person. And then something supernatural gets its hooks in them. Uh-huh. And it's a very easily manipulated being that's like present on Earth that can do the bidding of what the creature Vecna in Stranger Things, It in or Pennywise in It can't do because they don't have a body. So it's very much like that vehicle in both things. So and I see too, like when you think about some of the characters, like I said with the girls, but like I see a lot of like Mike reminds me a lot of Bill. Like, you know, he's that lead, like, of the group. It's kind of like this unspoken, like, leader. Dustin kind of gives me a little bit of, like, the Richie vibe. Like, he's kind of, like, they're, like, funny, you know, making jokes and kind of goofy. And, yeah, I see a lot of, like, similarities there. And then some of that, like, strife that's built into it by, like, the single parent thing, too.
Yeah.
You know, obviously in that you have Bev who's a single parent household who doesn't have the greatest upbringing. You have, why am I blanking on it? Eddie. Yeah.
Yep.
Eddie, who's raised in a single parent household too, which Eddie reminds me a lot of Will in Stranger Things. You know, then you have Joyce, you have Hopper, you have all of these, like, they're like little threads between them that I could definitely see a lot of similarities character-wise and then also just storyline-wise.
Mm. Yeah, you're right about, like, even going down to, like, Hopper, like, usually King loves to write, you know, the police force. Like, there's that one, you know, police officer or sheriff that's, like, battling past demons like in Needful Things, Pangborn, who's also in the dark half. He loves repeating characters, who has lost his family and is kind of struggling to stay sober and, you know, has to kind of save this town, much like Hopper has to with these, you know, kids. So you're absolutely right about that. I see a lot of, like, mirrored imaging with the Losers Club versus the Stranger Things kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like I like that vibe, and that's why I'm, like, interested in it. But, like, what makes it so scary? Like, I guess without spoiling it.
I read it, like, Stacey, I read it as a grown woman. I was like, I'm going to read this. And I distinctly remember I was reading it in a room alone. I wasn't that far in. And I had to close the book, go find my husband. And he was like, I thought you were reading. And I was like, I was. I just need to be in and around someone, because I felt like something was gonna, like, come and get me, like, in the room alone. Like, it's just
bad.
It has the I don't even know how he does it, but, like, the creepiest feeling that he gives you of just this, like, I think because it like infiltrates, like, it infiltrates this entire town when it comes back from and it has this, like, it makes people just really terrible and do really awful things. So it's not like it's just this one creature that you need to be aware of. It's like it has its hooks in
everywhere,
everyone and everything. And it's,
and it,
like,
takes
storming
form of your biggest fear.
Yes.
So no thank you. And most of us hate fucking clowns. And there you go. But you're so right about that, with it taking over the town, because it makes me think of season 4 of Stranger Things, where, like, two examples, Jason Carver spreads mass panic throughout the entire town, and you have full-grown adults hunting down this teenager like he's actually the devil himself, and the police have no control over it. And with the Krill house, much like the Marsden house with Salem's Lot, and the house that they go on, I forget the name of the street, the kids go in it, where the werewolf pops out and stuff. Like, literally, this old dilapidated house that children have no business going into, they go into.
Uh-huh.
Bad news bears all around.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just... And, you know...
That makes sense.
I love that the kids are the heroes, but then it's also this, like, oh my God, we're relying on, like, these
children.
Kids,
yeah.
Like, to fix this, because they're the only ones who see what's actually going on. The adults are so, like, busy with life, or maybe you lose a little bit of, like, belief, so you don't see things. But in both stories, it's only the kids can see it for what it is, for what's happening. The adults are, like, in their own little worlds. They're like, oh, it's weird these kids are disappearing. It's weird that, like, stuff's happening across town. This is kind of strange, but all right. And only the children are like, everyone's gone insane. It's up to us. Like, okay. So it's like, I can see that in both, too. I know those aren't the only, like, movies, books, whatever, that do that, but definitely between those.
Yeah, it's interesting to, like, have a a book written for adults have like children kind of like main characters, because I feel like now that I'm like, you know, I guess I'm an adult.
Guess so.
I feel like I shouldn't be like, I read a lot of books with a lot of children main characters when I was reading books as a child and teen and whatever. But like now it's like, oh, am I supposed to be reading like books with like not child main characters now because I'm not a child? But like, I feel like you said, a lot of Stephen King's, like he has like a, that's kind of a common theme of like the kids are the ones that are seeing it. And yeah. I get it with like just everything that adults have to like deal with. Like kids can kind of like have more brain power for like.
You're too busy going, oh, my student loan payment. Exactly. And a Demogorgon or a clown runs by. So
I
yeah, I get it.
That laundry.
Yeah. 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 I know. That's what I was literally doing before we started.
What are we eating for dinner? Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting sucks. Too, because I think with Stephen King, like now that I'm thinking about his books, I don't know that it's always kids either. Like, it really is It for him.
Okay.
Stand By Me. Just I mean, few. He does it. There are a few. And
Carrie
then there's
is
definitely...
like teenagers.
Carrie, they're yeah. teenagers. Yeah. You know, Firestarter, yeah. obviously, Charlie, Rose Red. There's a girl yeah. named Annie. He tried.
Like, I'm like, yeah.
20 more.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. No, yeah.
Yeah. I know I'm really pumped that Frank Darabont, I don't know if I'm butchering his name, he's the director of Shawshank. He's directing a good amount of season 5. And he directed like a bunch of the episodes in the first 2 seasons of The Walking Dead back when it was good.
Yeah.
So I have really high hopes because that's my all-time favorite.
I want to rewatch the first couple seasons of The Walking Dead, but like I don't know where I need to stop. Like,
I know.
Because I never finished it, but like, what's the cutoff? Like, just
for me, it was like Negan is introduced, kills a beloved character, then shut it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you could probably stop even sooner than that, honestly, but you loved Negan.
You
so.
Gotta see Negan. Come on.
Honestly, though, like, the Negan was that was like earth shattering. It was just, and yeah. it was another really disturbing, like I was starting a new role at work the next day and I remember being like, I should not have watched this.
Yeah.
Like, I am the most disturbed with any TV episode I've ever seen. And now
and you knew
I'm
it was
like,
coming, but
yeah. And I'm like, I feel like I just lost a friend and now I have to yeah. go and be a grown up tomorrow. And I don't want to. I just yeah. want to be like,
kill your darlings.
Stacey.
I know, man. I know.
That's so funny. What else? Anything else that you guys can think of?
Let's see. I think basically we went over Easter eggs. Of course, the font, the title font.
Ooh,
that's like
yeah.
his Viking publishing. Like, that's Needful Things font. That was the first thing I actually jumped out to me when I first watched it. I went, oh, it kind of looks like Stephen King font. Alexis, what are, like, some things, like, either some theories or things you would like to see happen or things you hope don't happen with season 5?
I think, for me, I would like to see, I know this is a big thing for you too, Stacey, because you love the character, but the Eddie character being gone, I feel like he added a lot to the story. So I hope that they bring him back in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And stay true to like the fan theories about, and you'll have to forgive me, I forget what the character is that he becomes in the comics.
Cass.
Stacey's. Yeah, I would like to see that. I definitely want to see more of this backstory of Vecna. I want some of those dots to be connected because I still have questions about things. And I want to see more of this, like, I loved... We call them, I don't know if you've said this on the podcast days, but the Winnebago crew. Like, the Winnebago crew was my favorite thing about like that Winnebago driving around and dropping them off and stuff. Like, I loved that. So I would like to see more of like that, like them just strategizing and like, let's, you know, you're going to do this and I'm going to do this sort of thing. That would be fun. I like that it seems like everybody's back together now. The whole like Joyce moving away and not being in the same town, like that to me was really, it took away a little bit for me. I was like, I don't like that they're way over here and not part of what's going on. And I get it. It helped to develop a little bit more for Elle and for, I think, for Joyce's character too, and Will, but I just would like to see more all together back in the town. And yeah.
Solid.
I think we'll get that for sure. Like them all back together. Very season one kind of.
Yeah, because like, the Duffer said like it's going to feel like season one and season four had a baby. That makes sense.
Okay.
And they said a lot of the original pairings of season one you're going to see, like the boys, which obviously now they have other people involved, you know, Joyce and Hopper, stuff like that. So hoping that they do stick to that, because the chemistry, like off everybody, every grouping worked. But I agree, like out of all the crew, like the Winnebago, the Hawkins gang, those were the ones I was most emotionally invested in.
Absolutely.
Not to take away from Russia or California, but I was like, you know, this is the most unlikely band of misfits, and they basically have to plan out how to save the world again.
Yeah.
Ooh, can I add something too?
Yeah.
Always.
I want to see more of, to your point, Stacey, like that, like quiet opportunity for Hopper and like the dramatic moments, because I feel like his character lends itself to like being, you know, he brings in the funny because he's like this, like, I'm being a dad, whatever. But I really liked that moment in season four for him. Mm-hmm. And I it really like pulled me into his character. So, and I know on a show like that, it's again, really tough ensemble cast. You've got a lot going on. So to have a really quiet opportunity for a character is tough. But I really, it endeared me so much more to him.
Yes.
And made me root for him, you know, going into the battle scene. And like, I felt so like pulled in. So I would like to see some more opportunities for him, or for some of the other characters as well.
Because I know we've talked about this before, because we're right now doing deep dives on season three. His character is hilarious in season three, but you're almost looking at him in a more comedic light than anything, him screaming at the top of his lungs to Joyce wearing his Magnum PI shirt. And you're wondering, like, well, where's the guy who, when he found Benny dead, going, you know, Benny was my friend? Or him, you know, talking about Sarah, his daughter. You know, that seemed to get a little lost in the comedic relief of him playing a dad, you know? And then it almost feels like he had to go through Russia to hit rock bottom, to have this like reflection speech where you find out more and more, and you only get little like taste of it, like nods that you assume, like, he must have served in Vietnam. Oh, okay, this must have happened. You know, he got divorced after his wife, you know, his child died. But seeing him with that speech, that monologue, like, chills. And that's why I feel like if it was Hopper from season three going into battle, yes, you're emotionally invested in this character, but it just meant so much more because it was almost like he had nothing left to lose in season four. So I completely agree.
Yeah. Also, the other thing you said was like more of the Henry Vecna backstory. And I think that Stacey and I this weekend are going to get a little bit more of that when we see the play, because like the Foreshadow, like that's set in the 50s or whatever, and it's like it's going to be, you know, the characters when they're the older characters when they're in high school, which I'm not really sure because it seemed like Vecna was younger than them, but we'll see how they do it. But
moisturized.
Yeah, I'm excited to like get some of those dots connected, like, for the backstory. So I've been really excited to see this play for a while. And curious how they're gonna like you know, connect those dots for people who haven't seen the play before the new season comes out. Like, I know a lot of people really want them to, like, put a live performance of the play, like, on Netflix, but I don't know if they'll do that or not. So,
yeah, that's really interesting to see how they'll, like, weave that information in. If, to your point, not everybody has the opportunity to go do it. So it's like,
right,
how do you fill that in for fans who can't?
Yeah. So is it going to be like backstory that's intriguing and adds to it, but is not absolutely necessary to understand the story? Like, that's what I'm kind of assuming. All right. Well, this was so fun.
This was a blast.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. I had a great time.
I'm glad we could finally make this happen. All right.
You got to see, you know, the other side of things, Megan, you know?
Oh, you this and is... Alexis?
Yeah, exactly.
And Alexis got to see the podcast from an inside perspective.
Yeah. Inside baseball knowledge now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Boop.
Did you just boop my nose?
I did.
Yep. Okay. All right.
Okay. I think that's it. Is that good? Over and out.
Over and out.
Bye.